Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, your weekly dose of Porsche culture. With Tech Talk, Heritage, the Ren Builds playlists, along with a massive dollop of waffle, we'll keep you entertained. So subscribe now on any podcast streaming service and YouTube. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to, I don't even know what episode it is, episode one of season three. I'm not on my own today, so this is quite fun. Those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a while, you will know this man, Mick. Welcome back.
Morning, Paul.
Hello. We are blessed to be in Porsche Portsmouth, and they've offered us a massive meeting room. We're in the boardroom.
It's in a boardroom, yeah. It's quite impressive.
It's lovely, yeah. Very, very nice. I was thinking that we might get disturbed slightly by sitting downstairs in the kind of service area, but no, we've got a lovely boardroom to sit and do this in, which is very nice. They're amazing at Portsmouth. So if you are in the Hampshire area, could totally recommend. The parts department are amazing at the fact that they've just humoured me asking for random parts off random cars and then gone hunting for those parts. So huge thanks to Porsche Portsmouth. There's some tasty cars here as well.
Oh, yes.
There is big wing 3RS 992, slightly smaller wing non-RS GT3 downstairs. There's a Speedster.
Speedster, yeah.
Tasty stuff. But your car's here as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Which is how we've ended up here.
Yeah. So I had the second Padam, P-A-D-M, fault in just over a year. It's quite regular failures on the cars with Padams.
So not limited, because your car is a, for those who haven't heard the podcast before, your car's a 718 GT4.
Yes.
2020. Yeah. Yes. But does it affect all models of that generation, irrespective of 718, 901.2?
Apparently, I don't know how true this is, but it did make me chuckle. Cool. It's the only British part in the car. So that did make me laugh.
Someone ex-Rover has kind of... ex-Morris.
Someone in Birmingham has handmade it.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, that's not a huge surprise, is it?
So. I have read that they've changed the part now, so touch wood.
So do you think that the previous replacement part you might have had was just one that was kind of not revised, and this is a...
Yeah, yeah.
Probably find out, actually. I can ask my good friends here to see, because the revision is like normally a dash A, B, C, whatever it is. And obviously as you go further into the alphabet, more revisions there are. So if it's like, if your previous one was an A and this is a D, there's been four revisions.
Yeah, but they've been failing for years. So all the cars that have had them, they have been a known chocolate part of the car.
Across the world? Not.
Across the world.
Bummer.
And it doesn't stop you driving the car, because it's a, I don't know if anyone knows, but when you get an alert on the car, they're color coded, so they're white, yellow, red. White means you can carry on driving, basically.
Yeah.
So it's just an alert, and it's a white alert. I think red means stop now.
Yeah, the car shifts itself.
Yellow means drive a bit slower. Yeah. You, just follow the handbook. So it's
fine. Okay. So what did you notice, any difference, or is it just because it basically? Let's just dig into that a bit. So I don't even know what PADM stands for. Porsche active
differential
management,
something like that. Yeah, so it's an active suspension part. So obviously there's a balance between speed and comfort.
Mm.
So when you're going slow, it softens up, and as you're speeding up, it tightens up. So it's electrically tightens up. When it fails in its stiffest setting.
Okay.
So, you know, I think there may be a placebo effect, but definitely when me and Moira were coming out of the Cotswolds the other week, you could feel it bouncing a bit, only at slow speed. Yeah.
Does it affect the rest of the system? Because they're all interconnected, right? I would know that from my DSC controller against that.
I don't think it does.
They're just isolated to that one thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't lock up PASM and it doesn't have sports chrono.
No, so I can still use PASM.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's just limited to that one system.
Yeah.
Interesting. But it's a pain in the ass to change, apparently, right? So
And it's $2,000 a pop.
$2,000.
And so luckily my first one failed 3 years, 2 weeks into my Porsche, in my GT4 ownership. I just extended the warranty.
Just as well, so, like 2 weeks
So right. three year extended warranty was 1800 quid. And now two of these have two grand a pop. So
you've cleared it already, yeah. Right? Yeah. And hopefully if they revised it, that'll be it. But then because you've got to kind of, I think it's, you were saying they've got to take the rear subframe or at least drop it down slightly.
They've got to do something at the back. So
with that in mind, you're going to need a geo afterwards. So I'm guessing they'll do that as part of the service. Yeah. They'll reset the rear alignment.
Yeah. Put it back to Porsche stock settings. But I've not touched the geo on the car yet. So now might be a good time to get it.
And the fact you smashed around a load of laps, you know, different circuits and, you know, you've done a fair bit of that, right? So tyre wear, all good?
All good, yeah.
Still on
Cup 2s. Mm. Still on the original tyres. Well, one's been changed because it had a...
So they're probably coming towards the end of their usable life.
The rear ones are a bit low.
Well, is that, and plus they're four years old, right? So if they've heat cycled on a track tons, and they're coming low, then it's probably a good time to. In fact, it's probably a good time to do the rear tires.
Yeah,
possibly even the fronts as well if they're timing out, and then get a geo at centre gravity or Barn Sports, and we're really good.
Yeah, I mean, I did a track day at Alton Park last September. I was a bit worried going because it's up Manchester way, up north. I don't want to offend people up north, but I was worried about it being raining up there.
Yeah.
But we got up there and it was that freak September week we had, and it was mid-30s. Oh yeah, it was, and the tyres, you could feel them going after 20 minutes. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's like, normally I just do one cool down lap, but I was doing two cool down laps.
Really?
It's quite a small lap as well, Alton Park, but it's really tight and twisty, so you are putting
a lot. Cup 2s, and they're primarily a track circuit tyre that's road legal. Yeah. Then it's not the other, but PS4S is kind of the other way around, and they're kind of the road tyre with a track, you can use them on track.
So. You could definitely feel the rears
going
towards the end of that each 15-20 minute session. And then I made the mistake of parking under a tree as well, so I then took all the shit that was under the tree onto the track after that, so.
Yeah. Brilliant.
So it took a lap or two to clean them up.
I have to get, it's probably a good time actually to mention, Michelin have collaborated with Rengineering, which is pretty impressive. So the good people of Michelin, this is actually completely organic, this conversation, but in fact, we've gone to Michelin. Big shout out to Michelin for dropping a set of PS4S off to my house the other day for some work at Boxing Gas. So if you listen to the Drive Talk podcast regularly, you'll hear the episode that goes out about Boxing Gas, and in that will be myself walking around my car because it was parked on the Michelin stand at Boxing Gas Megaphonics 2024. So big thank you to Michelin, big thank you to Petrol Ped and Joe Achilles, lovely guys that I met there as well, and the whole team at Michelin, so big thanks to them. Not only that, they are just the best tire for your Porsche. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that whether there was any connection to Michelin formally or not. Think about the alternatives, and this is my personal view now. They're not representing the views of Michelin at all, but my personal view is Michelin is just streaks ahead of everybody. I don't know what your take is on that.
Yeah, so obviously I only had Michelins on the GT4, but on my 911 I had Bridgestones and I had Pirellis, and then I went to PS4.
By choice, or was it just there wasn't a Michelin tire available?
There wasn't at the time, so I went PS4 from just driving, road noise, comfort, they were just so much better tyres.
Yeah, it is amazing.
I find the Pirellis quite noisy.
To not focus on the negative about another tyre brand, but actually the positives about Michelin, amazing. I've put a set on in 2022, so only 2 years old, and I've worn out the rears, mostly driving around Europe, really, to be fair, because I haven't driven that much around the UK, but laps of the Nordschleife, GP circuit, driving around, amazing to say that really, driving around the Alps. And they've been fantastic. Rain, snow, sleet, track sessions, the lot, and they've kind of coped with all of their, really getting to the end of their life now, about 3 and a bit mil. Sticking with Michelin, or are you going to try something else?
No, I'll stick with Michelin. Michelin.
Yeah.
They've got to be P-rated as well, haven't they? So.
So N0 or M1, I think. I got dropped off a set of N0 tyres, and they're the Porsche kind of... Porsche, and apparently we're going to get
N-rated.
Yeah, but P-rated, same thing. But we're going to get Michelin on for a tech talk So that's going to be really interesting, because some of the stuff I've just said, you can quite clearly see that I haven't done my homework particularly, but that's a standard thing for this podcast. But we're going to get Mitchell in on, sit down with them, you know, ask them all the questions, try and, you know. So if you want to jump on the post that's going to be on Instagram, at Reengineering UK, and you can kind of put any questions up, I'll put a story out or something and get some questions off you guys. So anything you want to know about tyres, and particularly Michelin, send me some questions and I'll make sure they're asked and we can kind of figure it all out, you know, get the honest truth about all their stuff and what their plans are. I know from talking to them briefly at Boxing Gas, there was a shit ton of work that goes into an N-Racer tyre, way more than I thought there was. I thought they would be kind of a slightly different compound based on some data that Porsche gave them. It's not, it goes in, there's so much testing that goes involved. So anyway, that's for another time. Yeah. We'll get into that at another point. But so hopefully, mate, your car will come back. How long have they got it for?
About a year ago, they were all, you had to wait for the part. So he thinks they may have the part in stock. So it should be ready by the weekend.
Oh, cool. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's Thursday now. So yeah. Nice. Yeah, pretty good. Anything else going on with the GT4 at the moment?
All good. Recalling as well, so it's quite good timing. It's they're doing something with they're reclustering the dash or the lights to do with the headlights when you go abroad. I don't think you can change the angle at the moment, so they're doing a recall on that as well.
Right. So they'll just give you the option of doing. Have you haven't been abroad in that?
No, not yet. No.
You're going to.
I do want to.
I keep pestering Mick every time I start planning a trip. Come in. He's like,
Yeah, I work shifts, so I've got to get planned sort of 6 months ahead. So,
yeah,
me and Maura keep saying we got to go, so we want to go. I mean, I had some great times in Europe when we went to.
In your 997.
We went to Dinslaken, the Porsche Freund event over there. Brilliant times, you know.
Maybe that's something to do. That's still going, right?
I think they've changed venue now because it's got bigger.
Yeah,
it's the biggest Porsche event in the world, I believe.
Wild, isn't it?
So you see anything there. I think we saw, from Porsche tractors I think we saw four 959s. You never see one on the road.
No.
And there's four of them driving around, you know, so you see 918, you see the whole lot.
Just everything.
Everything.
Amazing. All right, maybe that's something to consider then. Good. Let me have a look at what I've got. Because for once, this is a strange turn of events, because typically these episodes, Mick comes with a giant list. I'm the one that kind of has got absolutely nothing to say. I just sit there making, you know, coming up with crap halfway through the conversation. Yeah. It's probably worth talking about some of the episodes that are shot already. So popped up north to see Mike Brewer. So again, you know, like I said, in the trailer that I dropped last week. I'd be amazed if anyone listening to this podcast doesn't know who Mike Brewer is. I didn't realize how much of a Porsche guy he was. So he's literally just bought a 964. It's pretty rough. And driven it over to the Carbone Liveries guys, and they're doing a whole kind of restoration project on that. So that's going to be really interesting. Mike tentatively asked me to go out there with him to
do an
episode. Yeah. So.
So what's it? He's got a red 993, hasn't he? Is that right? Because I've seen it on Wheeler Dealers, or is he?
I think he's over the years. I mean, this will be all on the podcast anyway. But over the years, he's had a ton. I think at one point he had 9 or 10 different Porsche.
Wow.
I didn't know that, right? Because you think of him as like just having all sorts of random stuff, but no, he's primarily a Porsche guy. And then he sold all of them, cleared all of his cars out by about two or three, I think it was, a beautiful 1962 Cooper S, Mini Cooper S, and this 964 that he's particularly hot on. So it's a turbo, which is a special turbo anyway. He's driven it across to...
Is it bad boy spec?
It's not bad boy spec. But what it looks like now is irrelevant. Because I think he's shown me some of the renders and some of the early designs, and if it looks like what he's shown me, it's going to be pretty spectacular when it's done. So, and I've not spoken to the Carbone guys before, so it'd be really interesting to head over there and hang out with them. I've seen them, and I think probably most people have. You know, some of the stuff they do, the interior works great.
Yeah, so. Like Poland, is it, or is it?
Poland. Yeah, but I think they started off making, you know, small little parts, and they've grown and grown and grown, and now they've got an entire workshop. So, yeah, it'd be fun. So that was Mike Brewer. Let's talk about the Tuthill GT1 for a second, because that dropped last week, and I don't think anyone was expecting that out of Tuthill. Yeah, and I'm proud to say, actually, the guys that are going to be working on the Ren 550 O Sport, they built that car.
Really?
Yeah. So all the bodywork you see is all out of O Sport. which is amazing. And Jake, the guy that owns O-Sport, phoned me up and said, I've got something to tell you. And this was the day before, obviously there's an embargo, so all of the press knew about it and had photos and stuff, but no one else was talking about it. He phoned me up and was like, I haven't been able to talk to you about this, but we've built this in GT1 thing. Wait until you see photos of it. And I was like, oh, no, sounds good. And then all the press photos dropped the next day. I was like, what the?
Yeah, I mean, the pictures are amazing. I don't even think I read it. I just looked at the pictures because Connor sent it.
Yeah. For those of you that haven't seen that car, it is, I don't know what you call it. It's like a 959 sort of squashed into a GT1 1990, whatever it was, GT1. But it's modernized, but not too modernized. It's got these, the interior is, I'm doing it. You can tell that it's one of those cars that is hard to describe, but perfect. I wouldn't have been at all surprised if Singer had dropped it. I'd have just been like, oh yeah, Singer's a new thing. But it wasn't, it was Tuthill. And they're particularly known for their resto mods, their 911 resto mods, all their rally cars. That's what they do. And then starting to move out of that, or kind of doing that alongside something like this. Yeah, amazing. So we're off to Tuthill. We're supposed to be on the 9th of September. So are we now on the 22nd? So in 2 weeks' time, we're supposed to be there until apparently Rich is burnt out and taking some time off with his family. So it's going to be mid-late September, but still going to get to go and see that car person and sit down with Richard and ask him all the questions. Yeah. Like, talk to me, mate, from like your earliest days and your kind of, which is standard for the podcast now, all the way through to building that GT1 and what the future looks like.
Yeah.
So, will I get a drive in it? I think it's highly unlikely. I asked for a drive in the 911K.
Yeah.
Because that's wicked cool, that car. Yeah. And again, I think probably most people listening to this have seen the Chris Harris 911K video with it popping flames every revving to 11,000 RPM. I think Tuthill are an amazing company. So, I don't know. We'll wait and see what I get. If I get a drive in anything, of course I'm going to be happy. That's happening more and more and more now. But you just never know, do you? You know, this stuff's prearranged. And when I spoke to the press person for Tuthill, it's very much dependent on how Richard feels on the day, how the conversation goes, and whether he likes you. Doesn't like you, you're not getting a drive in anything. If he really likes you, just chuck the keys and go nuts.
You shouldn't have said that, Paul, because now if you don't get a drive...
It's really clear, isn't it? I come back and I'm kind of meekly going, well, I didn't get a drive in anything. Obviously, he didn't like me.
Yeah.
But the first, and there's a short episode on the YouTube channel from probably about a year ago now where I bumped into Richard at Vista Heritage. And I grabbed him. I said, look, can you do 2 minutes for an episode? And he was like, yeah, sure. And after the back of that, he said, you've got to come to see us. So I'm going to take that, you've got to come to see us, as a good indication that it's not a bad thing, right? And we're going to get to go, and do that. So, and the fact that... I've now got Elliot Mann Media coming with me to almost everything. So whereas before I was shooting everything myself and it was a single, it was like one camera setup. It's more than likely still to be one camera setup, but I don't have to worry about any of the kind of tech stuff going on around me. I can completely focus on just doing the episode, which makes life so much easier.
Yeah, I bet it does, because you're not doing that.
No, we're checking for batteries and things like that, all of that sort of stuff that you really need somebody with you doing that. It is unbelievably difficult to be present in a conversation and checking to make sure you haven't lost all your data or your information. So it's whilst it's, again, this is not my day job. This is something I'm doing on the side. Seeing it grow, some brand collaborations, being asked and invited out to companies like Tuthill, having somebody doing some of the media work for me. Editing's still on me, which is a pain in the ass, but it's growing, right? It's taking some time, but we're getting there, and that's excellent for me. So, enjoying it. The Porsche in the Park event that happened 8 weeks ago, I think it was about 2 months ago now, maybe a month ago.
That was your live podcast, wasn't it?
First ever.
Recorded podcast, right?
Yeah, well, live in front of an audience, which was so two episodes back to back. One with a guy that owns a Carrera GT called Graham, lovely guy. It was really interesting because I've never briefed anybody. I never give anybody questions, and I never, even if they're the first thing people do is say, "You got any questions you can ask?" It's like, no, that's not how this works. It's a natural conversation. So, it's really interesting. I thought it would be a really deep, meaningful, what it took to get to a Carrera GT. And it wasn't. It was just fascinating to hear somebody talk about their life experience in a really almost slightly disconnected way. It was, and not as passionate about owning a Carrera GT as I thought, but then more passionate about, got a 903 GT and had a typically a bad boys 964.
Yeah.
So, and he was more passionate about those cars than he was about owning a Carrera GT.
Wow.
So anyway, it was a really interesting episode. I can't wait to put that one out. And then off the back of that, we had Barry. So Barry is the owner of Hartech. Typically what happens with Hartech is you get somebody that's in the tech company, the tech side of the company. But I actually got Barry, the owner. So I got to hear all about his kind of start in life. And he is a proper, British eccentric.
Yes.
You know, he's a proper wizard.
Yeah.
So, getting to hear about his story and kind of, you know, where he came from and how he ended up doing what he's doing and his thoughts about how committed to the environment he is. I just had no idea about all that. So that's a proper nerd out job if you are super nerdy. But also if you're interested in buying a 906 or 907 with an M96 engine and you're terrified of the idea of bore score and what that means, then you get a full insight from the guy that is kind of, is the industry standard in the UK.
Yeah, so when I was investigating mine, when I was buying the 997, I was looking on 911 UK and there's tons of information on there. And Baz, he's a member on it or a user on it, whatever you call it. And he used to post loads of stuff on there, you know, really informative links out. And
he doesn't
then
have to do that.
He does. He puts loads of information out there. Yeah. So, and he says, if you don't, you know, you don't have to believe me, you know, this is just my opinion. And he talks about the bore scoring and a full engine build on a 996 and a 997.1. And I know quite a few people that have had their cars or their engines sent up there to get done. And because he does the oversized engines as well, so.
And he talks, literally brought a load of parts with him to that event and was like handing around, you know, cylinder heads and, you know, it was just amazing to see some of those parts.
I mean, I've read most of his stuff's published anyway, but I've read some of the stuff.
Have you?
Yeah, so it's like a lot of the early days, the bore scoring was only in PDK. And their thinking was because, not PDK, sorry, Tiptronic. Get my gearboxes right.
Yeah.
And the Tiptronic used to pull away in second gear.
So you were loading up the engine.
Yeah.
High torque, but low revs.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff around that. And then the cheaper the plastic parts were snapping off.
Yeah.
And just causing, I say, make it sound like massive plastic parts, but they're tiny little bits.
Yeah.
And then over time, that just scores out the cylinders, doesn't it? So, and that's why he's using, is it Nicosil, isn't it? Nicosil liners now.
You are still in for, you know, what was a 8 grand bill that's now probably a 13, 14, 15 grand bill for a proper rebuild, right?
So a guy I know, he had a 997 that looked like a GT3. So when you looked at it, it looked like a GT3. But it was a manual gearbox. His gearbox went, he lost when we were out in Dinslarkin. His third gear went, so he was driving around in second. He used to drive around in first and second anyway. Because he had a car graphics straight parked exhaust.
Right.
And then it was a bit lumpy and everything. And he ended up getting the gearbox rebuilt. And then he ended up sending the engine up to Hartech.
Right.
And they said, do you want the 4-litre engine? You can trial out the 4. And he went, no, I'll wait.
The standard, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and he said, I wish I'd get the 4-litre now. Mm. So
there's a few people. So JM, who is also at Porsche in the Park, hello to James. He's just bought a Cayman 987.1, and that's going to Hartech, and he's shot a video on Hartech as well, actually, and that's going for like a full build. I think he's going 4 litre in that. So his idea is to build a GT3 987 or variant, you know, the variation of that. So so that's coming up as well. That's, you know, proud of that episode, you know, to shoot in front of an audience for the first time. You know, it's very, one thing I don't think anybody realises is when you've got how many people are in the audience? I reckon probably maximum 50 people sat in a kind of, there's like a giant TP with a horseshoe shape around the seats. And then the thing that I guess no one would know, and this is probably the first thing that you'd know if you were in a band, people coming or going, you really notice that. if someone stands up, you're like, sit down.
Yeah. So that's why like, comedians always give them grief, don't they?
Because it's so funny. You wouldn't think that somebody hosting or kind of fronting a band or anything would ever notice those sorts of things. But you absolutely do. So you're kind of in present in the moment having the conversation, and then you see someone come and sit down and they're kind of nodding or smiling. You're like, yes, gone. But if someone gets up, you're like, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
Fascinating, mate. But there's going to be more of those.
You didn't have a wingman, though, did you?
I didn't have a wingman. Nah. You know what? It definitely needs a wingman.
Sorry.
So you'll have to come along next time.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can't remember what I was doing then.
Don't know. But like I think you might be on a shift again, actually.
Yeah, I mean, but the Megaphonics Boxing Gas one, I really wanted to go to that.
Yeah.
But my good wife Moira got me tickets for the British Superbikes at Thruxton.
Okay.
Well, so, and then you were complaining about how hot it was at Boxing Gas.
Oh, mate, it was blistering. Yeah.
We got to Thruxton at 9 in the morning, it was 22 degrees. Yeah. It was like, and there's no shade at Thruxton.
No, not at all.
Brilliant event, though, quite cheap.
Is it really?
The British Superbikes, yeah, it's a really good day out.
But we'll have to do something. Yeah, I think there's definitely an opportunity for us to do a live event at some point. I think. Been talking to Andre from Legends Drivers Club. Big shout out to Andre. And he's keen for us to do something there. So we'll do a live episode from one of the Legends events at some point, I think.
Wait, where's his event?
Western Brewery, normally.
That's right. It's near my mum and dad. So
It's not that bad.
Team mum and dad, that would go for a Sunday roast afterwards or something.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
But then there's some, he's starting to do events at Goodwood. There's one coming up, the Royal Brew. I forget where that is, but that's a very attractive, historic sort of building and area. So that's going to be really nice as well. So there's loads of different options coming up with Legends. Legends are a long-term collaborator with Rengineering as well. So my car. So I didn't come in my car today because like, I came in the app because I started stripping the interior back out again. So basically, the car is almost finished, right? So, but there's been things along the way that I've done that, again, if you've ever built a car, I think you'll kind of do stuff and then you move past it and then look back and think you could have done something better. So I've got a Design Tech Design 911 exhaust, which I absolutely adore. It's brilliant. But like most aftermarket exhausts, they come with a fob to switch valves open and off. I absolutely do not want that. I've wanted my car to operate like a completely factory car. So the fact that in order to switch the valves off, I've got to fumble around somewhere in a pocket, grab a fob, figure out which button is the one to open it or close it, it does my head in. So you can, it's all vacuum operated.
You mean you turn the valves off?
Very rarely.
Yeah.
Very rarely. It happens, but it's normally, if I'm coming in late at night or something like that, I don't want to upset people, but it's rare. But I've always wanted the button for just a PSE or sports exhaust. You can do that. It's not being done very often, but you can do it. And then you go into use periods to kind of open that option up. And then, so I've got to strip the whole center console out, run the cabling in from the engine bay into that, and then set that button up on periods. Same time, I've got a, when I installed the aftermarket stereo that I've got, I ran an Apple Lightning cable.
Yeah.
Through the glove, the sort of armrest area. I was never particularly happy with the finish of that. It always looked a bit crap as far as I was concerned. And I wanted the, I know you've probably got it in your car actually, there's a little USB port. I just wanted that. So I've basically collected the parts that I need to do that. So whilst it's all out to fit that PSE button, I'm gonna kind of run factory wiring in and connect that all up as well. Yeah. So I'll just have a normal USB connector in there. Just so it all looks factory. So.
With the exhaust button, Have you bought that bit separately, or have you gone to like Car Graphic? Because I know for my car, Car Graphic do a part.
Do they?
Yeah.
No. So if you remember that I've got a 991.2 GT3 steering wheel.
Yeah.
Because I wanted mode select, the Manettino for want of a better word, on the steering wheel. Because again, I hated having to fumble around for Sport and Sport Plus. The company that I used for that sent me free of charge the kit, effectively. No instructions. They've made it up before, and they've never sold it as a full kit, so there are no instructions. So there's a bit of kind of exploratory work to do it. But yeah, it literally came with all the Porsche parts and some wiring. I've got to figure it out myself.
Yeah.
So, but I can't wait for that to be done. And then kind of the back end of this year, waiting for Goldleaf Performance to, and this is the coolest bit, send me over their 4RS air intake kit. Now my car's noisy anyway, as Mick knows. What it's going to be like with a full 4RS side wind, the side windows are going, and then you're going to have the two carbon fiber window intakes, and then the full system. So literally, you lose the carpet in the middle, and into the glass, and then you have this kind of just a huge carbon fiber. It's like the beating heart of the engine made out of carbon fiber, and with a standard car, even the GT4, it's just carpet, right? You don't get to see anything. Yeah. So that lands, and I've shot an episode with Goldleaf back at the Nürburgring with some drive-bys and some in-car shots. So you get to see it in what a 981 GT4 is like. So I can't wait to get that in. Not keeping it carbon fiber. There's nothing else carbon fiber in my car. So I'm going to have it painted agate, or the side windows painted agate grey to match everything else that's agate grey on the car now. Otherwise, it just looked really weird having these kind of two pieces of carbon fiber and the rest of it's not. So, but that and 718 side, I guess you call them sills or side skirts.
Yeah.
And then the spider side vents. This is really nerdy now, but they're the little side vents. I didn't want to put GT4, you know, pods on, because my car's not a GT4, and I didn't want to make it look anything like a GT4 apart from putting 4RS side windows in. But the spider's got slightly elongated and slightly different shape. I just think it'll look really cool. Again, painted agate grey. So the side skirts will look like a 718. It's going to really confuse people when they walk up to my car, because they're not going to have any idea what it is. Unless they're just going to, you know, the idea is, and this is what I think people have quite liked about it so far, the feedback I've had is, you can look at that car and think, it's just a Cayman, it's just a Cayman. But if you're a Porsche nerd, then you suddenly start noticing tiny little details here and there and everywhere that kind of make it stand out from the rest of them. So
I'll just say this, I'm on a GT4 WhatsApp group. So obviously over the years, people have started getting GT4 RSs as well. They're putting decibel reduction systems into the air, because it's
that noisy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so when I went out with Goldleaf, I think they were on their sixth iteration to make it quieter each time, because they tried something.
Okay, so they've done the same thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think it's not available yet, but I think in the future they're looking at doing an option so you can choose loud as fuck. I want to keep some of my hearing, or I want to retain all of my hearing and not have tinnitus. And I would prefer the non-tinnitus version of that.
Yeah. But it'd be interesting if you did, you know, so I watched the Harry Metcalf video when the GT4 RS came out.
Yeah.
And he did a decibel check.
Like 98 decibels or something like that, wasn't it?
115 or something.
Was it? Yeah. Same as the Concorde taking off.
Yeah. And he said it was just so loud.
Brutally noisy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm used to driving a Lotus Elise around with zero noise reduction.
Do a before and after.
I will. I will actually get a DB meter.
Valve shut, valves open. Yeah, and then...
I'll do it all, because I'm starting to add things on that I hadn't had on the car before, because visually it looks pretty much finished now. I bought a DSC controller with a GT3 map. So those of you who don't know DSC, you basically take your PASM controller out of the car with the standard map and the standard range, and then you can fit this exactly, it fits in exactly the same way, same connections, everything bolts in. And it makes total use of the full sweep and full spectrum of available stiffness or softness of your PASM, Porsche Vac suspension management. So and the GT3 map is normal, slightly firmer than my original Cayman one would be. Sport is quite a bit firmer, and Sport Plus is proper kind of rigid or semi-rigid. Yeah. The standard one for a standard Cayman is pretty floppy. I've always felt like that. So at the moment I've got PASM shocks, KW height adjustable springs, that's it. So I'm going to try this DSC controller, and again I'm going to use testing. So I'm going to do a loop, my 1 hour loop without it in, try and figure out what measurements I can take, then stick it in, and then go and do the same loop, same day, same fuel, everything, same conditions, and see what I get back. But the beauty about those systems are you can take them to center gravity and they know how to update the maps. They can advise you on kind of what you can do with it to kind of best suit your driving style and needs. So it's just like having a remappable ECU for your suspension, which is really cool. And the beauty about it is you can just, it takes less than 5 minutes to disconnect. So if I have a car under warranty, now I'm not suggesting you do this, by the way, but I'm just saying that this is a fact.
If.
If.
Yeah.
if you had a car under warranty and you wanted to try that out, you could do that and it would never be known because you just pull out and plug it in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And then if that sorts me out and I get the kind of the, what I love about PASM is you get this opportunity to kind of drive down slightly rough roads and it's kind of soaked most of that up. Or if you're going herring around the Alps or on the track, you can firm it all up and it's great.
Yeah.
It's still a bit body roll for me. So I'm going to try DSC. And if DSC still feels a little bit, there's too much body roll, then I'll look at TT3 anti-roll bars because they're adjustable as well. And then I think that'll be it for suspension for me. But it's just fine tuning.
Mm-hmm.
The brakes are unbelievable now. Again, because my 981 had quite small four pots on the front and really small discs on the back. I've now got 350mm gyro discs, well, 330 on the back, 350 on the front, all round. Carbotech ceramic pads all round, and the 718 GTS calipers with braided lines, fresh fluid, all new hard lines everywhere. That has changed things completely. Now the brakes are bed in. I went out for a drive the other day just to caffeine a machine and some idiot pulled out in front of me. Now, the car had functional brakes, but poor Beth was in the car at the time and she wasn't ready for that to happen. And I kind of caught it out of the side of my eye. Yeah. She went, and you know, when someone brakes heavily and then you're flying into the window, yeah, bless her. And she kind of, yeah, I don't think she'll come out of that car for a while now.
You but need
harnesses.
Harnesses, mate.
Well, this is the problem. It's a road car, not a track car. So I've made that mistake in the past of having something that tries to do both. And unless you get something from factory that's really well set, you end up with a beast that does nothing. So. So yeah, I'm really at the car, although it's not here, I'm so happy with. But it just means there's not a lot to do now, and it's onto the REM 550. So
cool.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
What else we got? I think it's probably about it. The only other thing to do is to talk about Porsche Club Great Britain when we were at Megaphonics. The car was parked up and the chairman and a few other people were kind of literally just walking around before the event started because I think they had a stand somewhere in there as well. And they love my car and they've asked me to do a full feature. So that's going to be really exciting. I've also asked Carrie, now Carrie, if you're listening, hello, lovely to see you. I've asked Carrie to come on and do an episode about modernizing the Porsche Club Great Britain. Because I think it's, and they acknowledge this, and Carrie was up for a chat about it. Time's moved on from the ye olde Porsche enthusiasts. Everything's online. People are so connected through WhatsApp groups like yours with the GT4 guys or just forums. You know, forums are kind of a slightly relic thing anyway, but Facebook groups, you name it. Porsche Club Great Britain's model is still published a magazine, nice magazine, groups that are kind of firmed up and you can attend a group meeting. Well, most of that stuff happens organically now. So I've asked them if they're up for coming in and having a conversation about like, well, what's the future for Porsche Club Great Britain?
Yeah. It's funny you should say that. So I told you before you come up, we got invited up to Porsche Club HQ. First, you know, Morton on Marsh.
Yeah.
First time I've ever been there. Absolutely fascinating. So if you can get your Cayman up there.
That's what I'm trying to get. Yeah, the get Cayman it, is the Cotswolds because it's home for me anyway.
Get it up there. I mean, it's a small little, like a warehouse on its industrial estate in Morton-on-Marsh. And you walk in there and there's like a 996 cutaway. There's a Boxster, a wire car. No body work, just a wire and the engine at the back and the four wheels.
Yeah.
There's a 993 engine at the back. There's a full 356 at the back. Because the Porsche Club is initially founded for 356 owners to keep their cars on the road.
Wow.
That's why it was initially founded. And then there's also a trophy room there and an archive. Now, we got up there at our tea and coffee, and because they've got the VW van that does the rounds with the coffee machine in it, which is brilliant.
It's very cool, yeah.
Yeah. And it's got, I can't remember his name, but he's in charge of the archive at Porsche Club. And he gave us a really interesting talk about the art, because basically people have been chucking stuff at Porsche and it was just basically gathering dust in their loft.
Wow.
And so he was recruited, he's a volunteer, just to put the archive into some sort of, you know, manageable state.
Yeah.
So it's like a library of all stuff related to Porsche and other, some other bits and pieces. There's a tool box draw, you know, the drawer thing,
yeah,
with full of miniatures, so 1 to 43 miniature. Oh, it's fantastic, you know. And then there's a trophy room with, like, you know, there's Johnny Herbert's race suit in there.
That's so cool.
Alan McNish's race suit in there. You know, all these famous Porsche drivers.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And it, honestly, I was blown away by the archive. I'm in there and I'm looking around, and there's, I didn't realise they do a Le Mans yearbook every year. So, and they've got every one apart from the one year that I went. So,
really?
And I didn't even know you could get these. So, because I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but I went to Le Mans in 2013. Mm-hmm. The two people I went with are no longer with us. Mm-hmm. So, Andy Beaumont and my younger brother, mm-hmm, obviously both passed away. So I want to get this 2013 yearbook. So I was chatting to the archive guy, and he said, oh, you have to go on eBay and they're about 150 quid. I thought, that's fine.
It's fine. Just like
so that, yeah. I went on eBay and they are 150 quid, but I just did some Googling and there's a Le Mans site that does them all for 50 euros.
Oh, perfect. Have you ordered one then?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I think that...
But actually, what, that actually means something to me. That's,
yeah,
like, so,
of course,
you know,
it does. Deeply meaningful.
Yeah.
What I think is fascinating about PCGB is that they can make so much more out of that.
Yeah. Oh, so sorry, I lost my train of thought.
So
I was chatting to the guy, and I said, "Look, I said I'm obviously a member of our Region 17, which is Hampshire Southern. Yeah. I said I'm also in with the Cotswolds guys and the Surrey guys." Mm. They all do things differently.
Yeah.
So Cotswolds have got a really good WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
And they've got subgroups in there for all different events and stuff like that. Surrey does it all on Instagram.
Right.
And then our group does it via email, WhatsApp, and a forum. So there's bits, you know, they do it all. Every group does it differently.
Yeah.
So, and there's so much you can miss. So our group send an email out once a month. If you miss that email, you've missed a load of stuff. So it's...
Well, when are we... I will let you know the dates. Whether the likelihood is, we'll shoot the episode or the... Because there's a pro photographer coming out for my car, which would be really cool. So I'm going to get some lovely photos. But if I can do that at headquarters and then come with me, mate, we'll try and shoot that episode with PCGB there on the same day. It makes much more sense to do that rather than two.
It'll be interesting to see how open they are, because a couple of years ago there was a trouble at Mill.
That's part of the reason why I asked. I was mincing around trying to get it.
Yeah, there was a loads of people kicking off.
Yeah.
They were trying to get the people removed. The forum was quite hostile.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you don't have to put your real name on there, you can just put a handle.
See what
it'd be like, you know, so people were chucking in
all sorts of and it's that sort of stuff that.
They wanted to move the HQ as well. They wanted to move it to Bicester. So you've got the people who were employed at Cotswolds, you know, and there's all sorts, you know.
It's a lot, mate. It's a fully, what I will say is that I'll ask and if you're listening to this podcast, your ears are pricking up now about all of this kind of contention around PCGB. I'll ask the difficult questions. I will be diplomatic. Yeah. I'm not going to run them down. But I'll ask the difficult questions, absolutely sure. So again, if you're listening to this and you want to ping me your own questions, what you're interested in with this stuff, you can do that, info@reengineering.com, if you can email me or DM me and let me know what you want to know. And again, I'll put a story out just before we go. And if you want to catch some last minute questions for that. But it'd be really, I don't think anyone's done that so far. It's really kind of down
so
and start asking questions
Porsche,
about
Porsche
it.
Post was brought up.
Yeah.
And he said, amongst the hierarchy of Porsche Club GB, that is the most talked about thing. Because, you know, it costs a lot of money to produce. It's a monthly...
They've got an Evo staff writer on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said to me, how often do you read it? And I sort of laughed and I said, well, when I get it, I go straight to the region area.
Yeah.
Then I go straight to the Cayman register.
Yeah.
And then it sort of...
And it just sits on the site.
I look at the events and then I see it gave us dust.
Yeah.
And then I give it away to kids at car shows. So.
And that, again, all of these things, it'd be really interesting to get their take on it. Because they'll obviously have thought... What I got from them when I was speaking to Nick, the chairman, and Carrie, and a couple of the other people there, so professional, mate.
Yeah.
So it's not lack of professionalism. I just think there's growing pains, like everything, and modernization that needs to happen. But, you know, again, I'll say that to them directly and see what they come back with. But For now, though, I think that's probably a good time to finish this episode of Waffle. If you've been listening, thank you so much. If you've been patient and come back, I know a few people have messaged me and said, you know, when's the episode's going to start again? So I appreciate that level of support. You can find Rengineering at Rengineering UK on Instagram, at Rengineering everywhere else. Full episodes and the YouTube channel will start next week. And we'll see you then. Thank you so much. If you haven't gone out for a drive, get out for a drive.
Came over Portsdown Hill this morning.
Good.
Because I hate that M27 with a passion.
It's rubbish, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, for those of you who don't know, I'm waffling on again. The M27, it sort of links Portsmouth with Southampton, but yeah, a bit further.
Yeah.
And we had all those years of before COVID and during COVID of the smart motorway. Mm. It sort of went back to some normality, and now it's gone back to absolute. I think it's the unsafest road in this country.
I'm sure you're right.
The middle lane is 2 meters wide.
It's just a joke, mate.
And it's basically closed every day now, isn't it?
So go out.
Don't go on the M27.
Don't go on the M27. find some country roads to go on.
Yeah.
I'm quite frequently at Caffeine and Machine, the Hut. So please do, and a few of you have done this, and I really appreciate it. If you see me there, just come over and say hello. You don't need to worry. One person waited until I was just about to leave and then kind of nervously came over. I am a normal human being. You do not have to stand on ceremony. So yeah, do come and say hello. Always happy to have a chat. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Speak to you soon. Bye. Bye-bye.